From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with special guest host Carl Franklin. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 500 with guest Richard Campbell. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon, and welcome to Run As Radio. Yes, I'm not Richard Campbell, but Richard Campbell is here. This is Carl Franklin, and I'm a good friend of Richard's, and he does another podcast with me called .NET Rocks, from which all these silly podcasts grew. The original. .NET Rocks was a podcast before the word podcast was a word.
That's true.
I can't believe I figured out how to say that. Anyway, you asked me to interview you for show 500, partly because I don't know as much about IT as you and your guests do, and you have learned a lot of stuff about IT over the years, even before you started the podcast, but from talking to all your wonderful guests on this show.
Well, and you know, what's crazy is after 500 episodes, and who knew, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's only because I've been hanging around with you and .NET Rocks, and we're at, what, 1,300 and something shows,
right,
that even know these numbers are possible. But yeah, here we are at 500 episodes of Run As, pretty much only one a week for the better part of 10 years. But it is kind of astonishing to think about what's happened in those 500 shows from a tech point of view, from an industry point of view. It's crazy.
Yeah. And the craziest thing is we started Run As Radio basically with in 2007 with a little help from Microsoft Canada.
Yeah.
And they started us out. They paid for, I don't know, the first 50 or 100 shows or something like that.
Yep.
So that we could actually get going. And that was April 2007. So since 2007, a few things have changed, as you say.
I just was grabbing some old shows and looking at them. We would be remiss, you and I personally, not to acknowledge show one with Pat Hines.
Yes.
Because he's our rabbit's foot, isn't he? He's like, yeah. He was on the very first episode of .NET Rocks.
Yeah.
On the very first episode of The Tablet Show.
And very first episode of Run As Radio. Yes. And those other silly shows that we do as well. So
yes.
He's the christener of all new podcasts at,
yep,
PWOP. Although he wasn't on the first Hansel Minutes because that's beyond our control.
That was, that's true.
That was Scott Hanselman.
But yeah, what are you going to do? And I'm certainly not unhappy with that. And we talk storage technology and so forth. But the first one that jumped out of me at think about what's happened in 500 shows was show number 6, which is with a guy named Wes Miller.
Yeah.
We talked about our 64-bit future.
Right. How odd.
Wait a second. And you know, there was of course, 64-bit computing had been around for a while at that point, but it was all very specialized. This is about what do we do to bring 64-bit to Windows?
Yeah.
And Intel, a few years before, had sort of gone down this other path with the i860, which we eventually called Itanium,
yeah,
and ultimately called Itanic.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a completely different architecture. HP bought into it in a big way that it was going to be a new, innovative, profitable machine. And they did build a version of Windows on it. People just didn't use it. It didn't go anywhere. But it was AMD that came up with their 64-bit extensions to Intel. You know, the whole reason AMD existed is because Intel discovered that certain customers, and I'm looking like a place like the U.S. government, mm-hmm, weren't comfortable with sole source vendors.
Right.
Right. And so they basically gave specs to AMD so that AMD could build a comparable CPU.
And that's kind of odd for the government to single out technology for, you know, we don't want sole source vendors, because in a lot of other industries, they're perfectly happy with that.
Well, they sort of go back and forth on it. You look at defense industry, things like that. It goes all over the place. But what's cool is this idea that while Intel was off on the side, you know, working on this odd architecture, AMD took the architecture everybody already knew and loved and added these 64-bit extensions to it that ultimately Intel copied.
Right.
And that really led to this WoW 64, the Windows on Windows approach, to allow us to run 32-bit apps and 64-bit and so forth.
The funking layer.
Exactly. Although the original funking layer was 1632.
1632, right.
Yeah. But now this is the 64-bit version. But I was also looking at The real reason that we were talking about 64-bit in a big way at that point is we not because we needed all that compute. We were running out of memory.
That's right. And as a developer, I was very, very focused on conserving memory, dealing with memory leaks, all of that stuff. The memory management part of programming before 64-bit was a sharp focus. And it's funny. As soon as 64-bit was here, all of that focus just sort of went away.
Memory was just not a conversation anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even dealing with memory management in the developing world of .NET, we have tools that do this automatically for us. They clean up our unused resources when we're done in an application or in a program. And so we don't have to worry about it so much, but we always had to worry about how much memory is going to be used and do we have memory leaks and things like that. On the web side, they fixed that in 64-bit land by saying, you know what? ASP.NET is just going to recycle your app every once in a while, so don't worry about memory leaks.
We just take out the garbage.
Yeah, we'll just take out the garbage and don't even worry about it.
But you know, the toughest spot when you think about 2007 is we were in the Vista pain.
Yeah.
Show number 13 with Jeff Sigman, we were talking about, we actually talked about network access protection, but the biggest thing we were talking about was that Server 2008 hadn't shipped yet. You know, if you think about April 2007, the first version of Vista, the really difficult one, the enterprise-only one, yeah, came out in the fall of 2006, and it was like March 2007 they finally shipped SP1, and it was sort of the real availability of Vista, but by then it was already too late, and things were bad.
And for PowerShell was brand new back
PowerShell was just coming on then, but you know, the network stack issues in 2008, from a guy like me who's a web guy and a lot of folks that I talk to, you know, we don't usually talk about this, but they totally rewrote the TCP/IP stack. Like, they completely changed it. And it was slower.
Yeah.
Like, it was actually a step backwards.
Because it had to be managed, right?
Well, it just, they re-implemented it. It was almost hubris, I think, but they just re-implemented the whole stack, and they implemented it literally to the spec, not to the way people actually used it. And so it broke things. And it was unfortunate.
Well, okay. Thank God we got through that.
But PowerShell, yeah, just before the first run as PowerShell, the code name Monad showed up. The first time I did a show with it was with a guy named Tony Redman, who's a regular on Run As Radio. But at that time, he still worked for Hewlett Packard in their Exchange division. And so he was talking about the fact that you could manage Exchange with PowerShell, still calling it Monad at that time.
Right.
And it was all command-based. This was a very profound thing in 2007. Today, it's pretty straight up, like, that's normal.
Right.
By 46, when I talked to Marco Shaw, and that's now February 2008, that's the first time we had this conversation about this idea that PowerShell would be a way to manage every Microsoft product. It wasn't true then, but it was a goal. And of course, today it's true.
Yeah.
Today it's absolutely everywhere.
Right.
And hugely compelling.
You know, from my vantage point as a developer who has to do his own IT, right? As I'm a DevOps guy of one.
Right.
I don't have that corporate perspective per se, but I have worked in corporations and I know what the IT guys do, but I don't have that day-to-day experience that a lot of your guests have. But from a developer's perspective, it seems like over the years, the IT guys got more developer-ish, and developers, especially people like me, you know, who work in a bubble pretty much, for my own stuff anyway, have to get a little more IT-ish. And especially when you're dealing with stuff in Azure and AWS and the cloud, now you're all of a sudden not necessarily dealing with the nuts and bolts of IT, but you are interfacing a lot more with these services that do IT things for you.
Yeah. And you just had that ability, you know, that ability sort of evolved. In 2007, it was way harder. I mean, IT was okay in 2007. We were all kind of hunkered down around Server 2003 because we didn't trust 2008.
Yeah.
And, you know, networking was where it was at. In some ways, I think the dev audience at that time had a tougher time because that's the big outsourcing wave. You know, after the dot-com boom collapsed, it happened. And now there was all this connectivity to developing countries and there were smart developers there too. And so you had this wave of outsourcing that put a lot of pressure on development. I don't know that it worked all that well. It turned out that, you know, cheaper developers doesn't necessarily mean better. Mm. And if you don't have a good plan locally, you're not going to have a good plan remotely.
Right.
But, you know, that pressure, that didn't exist then for IT. I think it exists today.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the things that's evolved with the cloud and a lot of this automation is that you can do more of your operations remotely and automatically. And I think it freaks out a certain amount of IT people.
Also, I noticed a theme in and among IT people over the last few years that since a lot of this cloud stuff is happening, companies are slowly moving over their on-premise IT infrastructures, you know, more and more of it into the cloud, and more IT people are sort of, you know, have that existential fear that one day they're going to be replaced. And that isn't new, but it has come into sharp focus, I've noticed, with the people that I talk to.
And it's a recurring theme on Run As Radio, without a doubt, that I just have no evidence that people really lose their jobs over this, that more their jobs completely change. And I would argue for the better.
Yeah.
You know, like if your real value is flipping disks or spinning screwdrivers,
yeah,
or, you know, creating user accounts, yeah, rather than using automation for those things and right, outsourcing those things, you need to change job anyway. There's right, so much to do, right? I've never met a single IT organization that got to the bottom of their to-do list. Like, that's impossible.
Yeah, it is true. And there still has to be people that are responsible for the things that have to happen and happen smoothly. And whether you're doing the details of the implementation or you're managing automated processes that do it, you're still responsible.
Yes, I totally agree. And that responsibility does come with a specific mindset. That is a role. There's no two ways around it.
Yeah.
You know, something that hasn't really come true since the very early days of Run As Radio, my first show on IPv6 was show 53 with Sean Seiler. That's within the first year, just after the first year, in April of 2008.
And so whatever happened to IP6? Do we use it?
It's, you know, the last show I did with IPv6 was 495 with Ed Horley. So I've still kept talking about it. Uh-huh. And of course, Sean, back in 2008, he worked with Microsoft and they were talking about implementing IPv6 internally and how Windows 7 was going to, you know, be very IPv6 friendly. Mm. Vista also being IPv6 friendly, but it was still early days. My latest conversation with Ed Horley, we've been watching the Google adoption rates. Worldwide, IPv6 is about 14% adoption.
Oh, my.
Now, that's not, you know, once you get past 10%, that's good news. In the U.S., it's almost at 30%.
Well, that's okay, I suppose. But you would think it'd be more widely adopted by now.
Well, with the IPv4 reserves are basically depleted. You cannot get a new IPv4 address. They've all been allocated out to ISP. So if an ISP has one, that's fine. But if an ISP wants more, there isn't any more to be had.
So it's obviously a demand-driven system.
To some degree, yes.
Yeah.
But I think the big announcement this year was the fact that Azure now runs IPv6. So
okay,
every Azure host has got IPv6 addressing now all the way through the stack.
As well as IPv4, though.
Of course.
Yeah.
And even back then in 2008, Sean said, you know, the two networks are going to live side by side, arguably forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard to turn that stuff off.
Right.
Pure IPv6 networks may never be seen.
But, you know, I guess it's a necessity. When your IPv4 domains run out, you have to start using IPv6.
And the driver of this is smartphones, mm-hmm, IoT, just so many more devices now that we just need way more addresses than we could possibly provide in the IPv4 stack.
As somebody who hasn't really paid attention to IPv6 because I haven't had to, no, I've obviously done a lot of sockets programming. I know all about DNS. I know all about TCP/IP v4.
Yep.
Is it easier or more difficult?
Well, yes.
Yes.
So, I mean, the first thing is the addresses are much bigger, so you're not going to memorize them.
Yeah,
that just goes away. Name resolution is vital.
Right.
There is DHCP, there is DNS, like all of those things exist. But all of the things we've done to IPv4 to keep it as alive as long as it had, like subnetting and special classing and so forth, you don't need any of that in IPv6. So in some ways, the networking gets much simpler, but a lot of your reflexes are now wrong.
Right.
So it does take time to try and figure out what IPv6 makes sense of. And I'm happy to plug Ed Horley's book for administrators on IPv6. It is absolutely, it's one of the books I kept on my shelf. It's good to read.
I got to tell you though, speaking from experience, and admittedly it's not typical in IT, but I can't tell you the last time I actually picked up a phone and asked somebody what their IP address was.
Yep. Nor should you.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, Carl, I'm going to take over hosting duties temporarily because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by UpGuard. In the aftermath of data breaches, the public is often told we couldn't have seen it coming. But in a lot of cases, that's just not true. Over 80% of breaches have their root in misconfiguration, whether it be a firewall rule, server setting, open port, or third-party service. UpGuard is the premier system of record for IT configurations, no matter the platform, pinpointing anomalies and surfacing unauthorized changes in critical systems around the world. See how it works and get a live, customized demo at upguard.com/runasradio.
Yeah.
Don't I do that well?
You do that very well.
This is the job, and I'm not unhappy with it. And UpGuard's been a great sponsor, so I'm glad to have them on my 500th show.
Yeah, thanks, UpGuard.
We got to talk about DevOps.
Yeah.
So I went through the history, you know, looking through the shows. The first show I tagged with a DevOps tag, but I think I did this post facto actually when I put together the tagging system, was a show in May of 2009, episode 109, very coincidental, with our friend Jeff Atwood. We were talking about Stack Overflow and the architecture of Stack Overflow, how it was able to scale. You know, it was a huge hit even then, and how it was able to scale and stay alive. And so it was a very DevOps-y thing. And he talked about the tight integration of the operations folks, including a fellow by the name of Steven Murawski, who has been a regular on my show ever since, and how they actually operated all those things in Stack Overflow. You got to skip up to 168 in 2010, which is a show you did with me.
Right.
And we were talking about sort of futures in IT. And I said in that show, DevOps is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Right. That was 2010.
Yeah.
The first time I really had the public saying DevOps is going to be a thing, it was Jeff Snover.
Right.
Episode 275 in August of 2012. You know, Jeff today is a tech fellow. Back then, he was a distinguished engineer, but he said point blank on that show, we're serious about making the DevOps movement work in the Microsoft space. And I didn't do another show for about 6 months after that, maybe 6 months after that. But by 2014, I had a DevOps show almost every month.
Yeah.
And that the turning point on that for me was a guy named Gene Kim.
Okay.
And I call him the godfather of DevOps, but he gets upset when I call him that because really there's a guy named Patrick Dubois, who I've never had on the show, who's the sort of kernel of that name and that idea. But Gene and Jez Humble, who we've had over on .NET Rocks,
right,
and a few others, are really the kernel of this whole DevOps movement. And Gene's focused on it. He's written books around it. And we have a lot of conversations. My latest DevOps show, I'm very excited about it. It's one called The Science of DevOps.
Okay.
Show 488 from August of 2016. And it's with an amazing lady named Nicole Forsgren, a genuine PhD in information science.
Wow. You don't see that every day.
No, she's a professional. We're all amateurs.
So
she's the real professional.
Definitely.
And her data analytics on the DevOps movement has shown that going faster actually improves quality, reliability of software. Like it does the counterintuitive thing that you actually get better at everything when you turn up the pace on this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just a recurring theme. It's a recurring theme over on .NET Rocks too, but it's a recurring theme in Run As that, really grabbed on big by 2014. And it's just never, I don't think it's ever going away. It's the way we build software. There's a product that I feel like has almost been born and grown up on Run As Radio. One of my guests, his name is Clint Huffman. And he's one of my discoveries over these 500 episodes of Run As is I've met the smartest people in Microsoft.
Yeah.
And they are a group of people called the Premier Field Engineers. And most people don't even know they exist. It's only their biggest Microsoft customers have access to this, what they call Premier Service.
Mm-hmm.
And the PFEs are the field technicians of Microsoft technology.
Wow.
And they have been, I have PFEs on the show regularly because they always come with an astonishing story of, I was working with this company, I can't tell you who it was, and they had 100,000 mailboxes, and they had this problem, and they just walk you through how you do this stuff in the real world.
Wow.
So Clint's one of the PFEs. And back on show 82, way back at the beginning, in the second year of Run As Radio, he talked about a thing called Performance Analysis of Logs, or PAL. And this is actually a GitHub project. It's freely downloadable. You can use it any way you want. But what he's done is he's taken, you know, the performance logs.
Sure.
Everybody's seen them. And I call that, you know, performance logging the internet of your own computer, because everything you need to know is in there. You just can't find it.
Yeah. Right.
So PAL is about knowing what to measure and what good numbers there are. So he's gone around to all of the product teams and gathered up what they believe are the most important measurements because they've created them and what healthy values look like. And so you can use PAL on any computer you've got that's running services that you care about, say SQL Server or Exchange mm-hmm. or SharePoint or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it'll actually give you red, yellow, green indicators for the health of all of those things.
Wow.
So we've done a dozen shows over the past 9 years about PAL as it's grown up from just a kernel of an idea with Clint to, I think it's at version 3 now. And he's written books about it. And it's one of those things that I've realized that the story arc of PAL is inside of these 500 episodes of Run As.
Do you guys still talk about SharePoint? Because on the .NET Rocks side, it's been so long since anything SharePoint has come up, but apparently it's still being used and still being maintained, and Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, SharePoint's, it's an interesting thing on an operations side. You know, IT guys see SharePoint often as a virus because non-IT people stand it up, like, because it's easy to do. There was a wizard, right? But then actually managing and take care of it well is hard to do, right? We've done a number of shows around SharePoint governance. It's just like, how do you manage this effectively? And the big thing that's happened in the past couple of years as Azure's come on a big way, you know, when we started Run As, Azure wouldn't exist for 4 or 5 more years. You know, AWS was already around, but it wasn't a big deal in 2007, right? Cloud was still in its infancy. But today, the logical way to run SharePoint is part of an Office 365 subscription.
Yeah.
And that takes away a lot of that kind of pain. The governance is sort of built in now.
Right.
So it's easier to kind of do things right that way.
Hmm. Okay.
I guess I would be remiss coming into the end of this show if we didn't call out a few of my biggest guests. Any guesses? You know a bunch of them. Who's my most common guest?
Probably Mark Loudmouth Manassi, I would say.
you would be correct, sir.
And come on, he's so entertaining to listen to.
And there are shows that I've published on Run As where I've flatly said, I'm sorry, there's not a lot of nutritional content here, but I think you'll think this is funny because we had a good time talking.
Of course, Paul Randall and Kim Tripp.
Yeah, I mean, good friends. We do a twice a year show. Since we started SQL Intersection.
Yeah.
We've always done this Q&A show at SQL Intersection, which I realize now 2 times a year, we do a check-in on what people are worried about in SQL Server with that Q&A.
Isn't that a fun topic? What are you worried about today?
Exactly. And so they're one of my few hour-long run-as's, but they are literally just taking questions and answers. And it's typically Kim Tripp, Paul Randall, and Brent Ozar, although often there's a bunch of product team members in the audience as well, and we'll take answers from them too. But it's very interesting to go back and listen to those old ones and see how people's thinking is shifting
mm-hmm.
around those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Manassi's done 22 shows.
Wow.
It's a lot.
That's a lot.
But it can be all over the place. I mean, the guys, I have his Windows Mastering Series books from ages ago.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to just see how all of that's evolved. He's still thinking about all of those things. Another very common guest for me is a guy named Stephen Rose.
Yeah, Stephen Rose.
Yeah, we knew him as an RD back in the day, and then he joined Microsoft, and he's always worked on the Windows team one form or another. Yep. So he's done 14 shows with me now.
Mm.
And he sort of came on when Windows 7 was about to ship, and he's just always been focused on Windows going forward. But he's one of those guys, again, I can sort of sit down and do more of a meta conversation on where are we going next, what to worry about, you know, what any of those things look like.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy Steven a lot. I enjoy his company in person and also listening to him. Yeah.
Smart guy. He's good people.
So, Richard, putting on your future-looking hat, if you were going to take a guess, a flying stab as to what's going to be next, what are the more important things in the future that you think you'll be covering a lot on Run As Radio?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned DevOps already, and that's certainly not going away as we work our teams more tightly together. You know, back when I helped companies run high-performance websites, we just called it a well-performing team.
Yeah.
You want to call it DevOps, I'm fine with that. But, you know, good teams are good teams, and they're very valuable, getting effective at that. And part of that is recognizing what's really plumbing today. You know, email's actually plumbing, right? It's the same way you don't run your own phone network or you don't generate your own electricity. It makes sense to go to software as a service for an awful lot of these stuff.
Sure does. For developers too, Richard. I mean, a lot of what we're doing these days is just managing our different API keys, you know?
And there are good tools for that now, which is useful.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe it starts with understanding the principles, but then actually having good tools around that. A lot of the common IT tasks, you're seeing them come up as software as a service products. The same way that Salesforce sort of took over CRM, we're seeing good service desk products that can be run from a software as a service point of view. So you're not running infrastructure to manage your problem space. The revolution we're seeing in data analytics that I think is really changing a lot of what IT does is only possible because of the cloud, because you have this infinite amount of compute when you need it, which is typically only for a few minutes at a time when you're trying to analyze huge amounts of data.
Yeah.
So those things are still have further to go.
Sure.
But I think the one that's going to break our back, like where we're genuinely going to struggle in the next few years, is going to be the influx of this whole IoT thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bad name, Internet of Things.
It is. And we had to start somewhere.
Yeah. But, you know, you and I both have those little latte pandas.
Yeah.
They're $100 PCs. They run a full bore version of Windows.
Yeah.
And it just sort of speaks to, we're going to have these PC caliber devices so inexpensive, we're putting them into everything. And they all have internet connections, probably IPv6.
Right.
And they all represent security attack surface. They all represent management needs. They all represent group policy issues.
Yeah. Troy Hunt's going to be busy for a long time.
Yeah, that's never going away for poor old Troy.
Yeah.
But from a perspective of, you may be only managing so many seats, you know, I'm working in a 1,000-seat organization, but the number of devices associated per seat now, you know, used to be one.
Right.
And then, you know, then you gave them a laptop as well. So sometimes it was two, and then you had an IP phone. So that's really three. And they have a smartphone that's associated with that. There's four, and a tablet, five. And the number, and it just keeps going and going and going. So I think the measure of a seat is almost wrong. Now it's either the measure of a device or a measure of an IP or of a policy requirement that's going to, you know, be part of the challenge for that. So the explosion in devices, and we've certainly done a bunch of shows around smarter ways to manage smartphones and things that really, to me, ties into the broader thinking on IoT.
Yeah.
It's just going to be an overwhelming force going forward for the next 500 Run As episodes.
It is kind of funny how people define IoT. Some people think that manufacturing with sensors everywhere and collecting data is IoT, and other people think that home automation is IoT, and other people still, like you're talking about the latte panda with these little devices everywhere just being used by people, or people in other processes are IoT, and they're all right, really. I mean, definitions are always hard, but
yep.
But you're right. When you say it's all about lots of little devices, you know, needing a place to call home and getting data into the cloud, and what you do with that data is perhaps more critical and more important than actually getting it there in the first place.
Yeah. And from an IP perspective, it's going to be, it always about the controller, you know. It's always a controller and then a set of sensors, a controller and a user interface, but it's always about the controller. And so for me as an IT guy, it's, do I know who that controller is? Do I have some sense of control or restriction on that device so that I can let, you know, I know what comes in, what goes out?
Yeah.
You know, what's reasonable there? And it's, all of us are going to be large scale systems managers now.
Right.
You know, we used to do a lot of stuff manually because there was just not that many of them. There's now too much of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have to think at scale about all of these things.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm glad to see a lot of stuff come off of my plate, namely dealing with hard drives all the time, dealing with machines, care and feeding. You know, the only machines that I care and feed are my desktop and my laptop. And that's pretty much it. I got rid of all of our servers that we had in-house. Got them all up, all of our websites and databases up in the cloud. And that was the best decision that I ever made.
Yeah. And it made a huge difference. You know, I think these days when I think about the outages for Don and Rocks or Run As Radio or anything like that, they're very few and they're usually not our fault.
Yeah. Isn't that the best part of it? Is that you can say Azure outage, you know, throw up your hands.
Sorry.
Nobody's mad at me.
Nope. Exactly.
You know, in the real world, you might be losing $1 million or $2, but you know, it's, at least it's not your fault.
It's not your fault. Right? And isn't that really the measure of being successful in IT?
That's right.
It's not your fault.
We laugh because it's true. All right, buddy. Well, you've got a great show going here, and you know, we'll continue to cross pollinate and cross promote it on .NET Rocks. And listeners, if you've been a fan of Richard Campbell and Run As Radio all these years, you know, don't be stingy. Share it with people that you know, because more listeners means the more likelihood that Richard's not going away anytime soon.
I don't want to get a real job.
Yeah,
goodness knows.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. That's crazy, Todd.
Crazy.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
You bet. And thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.